Welcome to When They Popped. Let's rewind to a simpler time together and dive deep into the music, movement, and mania behind our favorite Y2K celebrities and trends. Hosted by Kelsey and Mary, it's time for another episode of When They Popped.
Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey, even though you probably can't tell by my voice.
Oh my God, and I'm Mary. How are you doing, Kels?
I'm great. I just had a really lit Thanksgiving, as you can probably tell. Mary, I want to hear about your Thanksgiving. What did you do?
Oh, just the family thing. Caught up on my housewife's read some celebrity memoirs and snuggled with my pug. How about you? Any transcontinental flights?
Oh, there sure were. I went to Japan, konnichiwa, for Thanksgiving with my husband and his family, and it was amazing. And I want you to know, Mary, I haven't told you this yet. Mm. I went to approximately 17 vintage stores that specialize in music to try to find you a Britney, like, limited release, like, Japan CD. And I could not find one. My hands were, like, black from all of the dust. Mike and I would sit on the floor and just sift through all of the CDs that they had. I looked through all of the t-shirts, like all the band, like memorabilia stuff. What's so funny over there is all of the vintage stores are like American clothing and stuff. So I was like convinced I was going to find something. Like every vintage store we walked into, it was like going into my closet in the year 2008. It was wild. I even found some like Boston Food Bank shirts and like college sweatshirts were like all the rage. It was so funny. And I'm sorry I was unsuccessful, but it was a good effort put forth.
Oh my, I hope you could. I'm truly, she did not tell me this. She mentioned it on an episode we did with Jesse, and
I keep my word.
Smoking, but that is so sweet. The effort means the world. I hope you guys didn't spend too much time.
No, it was so fun. Looking. It was so fun. And like, you know, your girl loves to shop. So that's what I was there for anyways.
Oh.
And aside from like the culture and eating everything I could in sight. The other hot breaking update that I have to share with you. I know you already know this, but I need to tell our listeners. You guys, I was in an Uber two nights ago coming back from a concert. And also probably why I sound like this. There was a Backstreet Boys song playing that I had never heard before.
How did you know it was a Backstreet? Like, could you just tell by the voices?
Or it was undeniable. It was undeniable. Yes. I was like, what the fuck, AJ? What the fuck, Nick? What the fuck, Brian? Like, what are these words that you're saying? Wait, I thought I sent it to you, and now I can't think of what the title was.
No, you did. Missing You?
Missing You, yes. So I literally had to record it on my phone and then Google the lyrics. I was like, what is this song? And it was a bonus track off of Backstreet's Back. So I guess the version I had like just didn't have this song on it. I was like, are you a Backstreet Boys fan? This was the second Backstreet Boys song to play and he didn't speak English. He had no idea what I was saying. And I was like, whatever, I'll take it. They transcend all geographies.
Truly, languages, geographies, truly music transcends all, right?
I've never said this before, but I never wanted the Uber ride to end. It was just straight up Backstreet Boys on shuffle, like not even just from their debut, like their whole discography is amazing.
How did he know?
How did he know? Well, anyways, let's get into it all. We have some piping hot Y2K news. Paris Hilton is a mom again. She just welcomed a daughter and she named her London Hilton. This is our sweet life prophecy coming true. London Tipton. Oh my God.
Like, of course, Paris is iconic and she would name her daughter London. And the fact that she kept it like a secret from everyone and then told them on Thanksgiving, I think that's really cute. I'm going to watch her show on Peacock or whatever it's on.
I saw some promo for that and her son was a surprise to everyone too.
Yeah. Like, I can barely keep a secret for a week, let alone, you know, a baby. Like, oh my God.
I know, a whole baby.
Whole ass baby. So, but yes, thrilled for her. Motherhood looks good on her. Hope everybody's happy and healthy and it's going well.
Agreed. Agreed. All right. So that was it. We're done with our banter. We're done with our Y2K news to know. Now it's time to get into the meat of today's episode. So if you have listened to any of our music-themed episodes, you know the name Kara DioGuardi, because Kara is one of the industry's most sought-after songwriters and producers. She's been awarded 15 broadcast music awards. And today's episode is dedicated to her and her incredibly impressive portfolio of the biggest bops that you probably didn't even know are written by her. Mary did such an amazing job recapping Britney's The Woman in Me that we're bringing back our When They Popped a Book Open book club to discuss Kara's memoir, A Hell of a High Note, Surviving Life, Love, and American Idol.
And this book club review will be a lot more hinged than the Woman in Me book club episode. But I appreciate that, Kelsey. And thank you, Jesse Shambliss from Jesse's Girl, for recommending this book. He did so indirectly. I was telling him about it, that I heard him on another episode mention Kara DioGuardi's autobiography. And I was like, what? Kara DioGuardi has an autobiography. And then I had to tell Kelsey, and here we are, both having read, listened to it, and ready to discuss. And so, just a reminder, this book came out in 2011. So I wouldn't describe it as particularly like up to date or with the times, but it gave us a lot of great content from that time to work with.
And after Mary's disclaimer, it's time for my disclaimer. Obviously, we're going to include some really fun clips from those songs that she's helped write. So we just want to say that we do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or performances in this episode. And the purpose of these clips is for commentary and critique. So, speaking of critique, right off the bat, I have a confession to make. I literally forgot that Kara was in American Idol.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it by the time she joined. So a lot of this information was totally new to me, and I was not clued in to like all the controversy of her joining as a fourth judge. Mary, did you watch that season? Were you a big Idol fan, or like remember any of that controversy?
I'm just as bad as you are. I remember watching Kelly Clarkson's A Moment Like This performance. That is honestly my only Idol recollection. I may have watched the first season, but probably didn't. And I didn't watch it from there either. So yeah, it was a great learning experience for me reading this book.
A Moment Like This was my first dance that I ever slow danced to with a boy.
Oh, with your crush?
He was my boyfriend, but we never spoke. It was one of those.
Like,
I think it was the first time we ever talked.
I miss it so much.
That was how I thought of American Idol, though, like the soundtrack to my life. But I totally ditched it after the second season. But I was just really surprised by some of the stories in the book. I thought that it would be more about how she wrote songs with certain celebrities, which obviously was a big piece of it, but it was really obviously more of a memoir of sorts of how she broke into the industry, her career, her life path, and it also included some really devastating personal events. So just before we get into the details, this is a trigger warning that the conversation to follow contains themes of eating disorders and also sexual assault.
Okay, let's get into it. Kara's songs have appeared on records that have sold more than 150 million copies combined. I think we all know she had her share of successes, but how she got there and how she really went on to rise up in the music industry as a woman was quite interesting and inspirational. We learn right off the bat in this book that Kara is from New York, and I think she seemingly admittedly had a pretty privileged upbringing. Her dad was a congressman. He ran for senator. She definitely, at least financially, it seemed to have a secure childhood growing up. So Kara went to Duke for opera. Okay, queen. Duke for opera? Like, that's just two words I never would picture together, but that's amazing. It seems like she always had a passion for music. Her mom's side was super musically inclined, but like, only one member of that side of the family, like, quote unquote, made it. So like, her mom had this perception that most musicians lived kind of a starving artist, hand to mouth type life. Her father, on the other hand, he was really a pusher, and he tried to push and encourage Kara to use her musical abilities, which she had. And he would always sign her up to sing at, you know, at a cousin's wedding, at a talent show, and just like spring it on her last moment. And it gave her these like crazy amounts of anxiety about performing and just like generalized stage fright.
I remember reading about this, and she said that she asked God to take her voice away because she was so sick of her dad doing this to her. And all I could think of was like Ursula, like, keep singing.
That's like, did you ever used to like, I didn't ask God, but I would be like, please let me be on crutches. Like, please give me a reason to be on crutches.
I want to break my arm. I wanted glasses and braces and a cast at all times.
Why are kids like that? I like don't understand.
We wanted attention. So anyways, yeah, it was really interesting that one of the things that Kara established early on in this book was this fear that she had of being the center of attention. And, you know, in retrospect, it kind of makes sense that she went on to be a more behind the scenes player of some of the biggest songs and artists of our time. Even though it wasn't necessarily by choice, she did try to pursue a career as a singer-songwriter. But I think she's so content with where she ended up because she just, at the end of the day, didn't have that desire to be that front person that you need to want to be to reach the top.
In this book, Kara talks pretty extensively about her struggles with food and an eating disorder, how she was counting calories, weighing herself multiple times during the day. She got to a point where she would basically be on this calorie restricted diet for 6 days a week and then completely gorge out during her like one cheat day. And as you can imagine, it just kind of snowballed from there, so much so that she actually had to take a leave while she was at Duke and go to a treatment facility in Florida. And this is something that she seemingly went through on and off throughout the years. It definitely wasn't fixed or resolved after going to this facility, but she definitely in her reflection said that this experience was a factor, and I don't want to say an inspiration, but like a motivation in when she was writing songs about addiction and that type of struggle. She definitely had a place to pull from where she could relate. And after college, she was pursuing the music thing 100%. And at this point, she thought she was going to be a singer still. That was her goal. And so she was doing the whole waitressing, trying to break into the industry type thing. And she actually was in like a garage band, I guess, for a while. And it was a bunch of guys who played instruments, and she was the female lead singer. That got old pretty quick for her. But, you know, I guess she was hooking up with one of her bandmates when she was like, spoiler alert, don't do that. It doesn't end well. But basically, the boys were in charge of writing the songs, writing the lyrics, the melodies, and they had no interest in her suggestions. And that just did not sit well with her because she thought they could be putting out a lot better stuff than they were. So she quit the boy band and started to try to go off solo, do her own thing, still pursuing this singing career. And she was trying to find like a songwriter to get a song from. Like, I don't know how you do. Like, I thought, like, in my brain, I'm like, you have to like buy a song from a songwriter, right?
Right.
Like, if I wanted a Max Martin song, I would have to write a pretty big check and then he would give me a song, right?
Didn't we read somewhere that he was like $100,000 a song?
Yes. Something. But like, I mean, I can think of some artists today who really should consider the investment, but
Whoa. That'll be on our Patreon one day.
I have some thoughts, but so she was like, I was trying to find a songwriter to like give me a song because she didn't have the finances to buy one, or, you know, I don't really understand how that whole process works, but she was not having much luck. And so she's like, what if I wrote my own song? And honestly, thank God she had that aha moment, because imagine if she didn't, all of these songs would just like not exist, like crazy to me. Also around this time, she had a little bit of a break when she got an assistant job at Billboard magazine as an assistant to one of the executives, the higher ups. And she described this as such an incredible experience because she was able to get a look at both the business aspect of the industry along with, like, I don't know, rubbing shoulders with musicians and feed that kind of artistic desire and passion that she had.
Totally. And you're so right that one of the things that stood out to me also were these connections that she had and the privilege that she had. There was one line where she said she was staying at the house of the president of Atlantic Records while on vacation with her family in Turkey. And she's like, yeah, so I got to learn XYZ. And so privileged, definitely. Connections, definitely. But at the same time, as you said, she did start at the bottom of the ladder as an assistant. And she just seemed to work really hard to get to where she eventually ended up. And I was just really impressed with her moxie and her business savvy. While she was at Billboard still as an assistant, she gave one of her demo tapes to one of the big wigs there to see what he thought of her voice and her songwriting. But she had the sense to not tell him that it was her on the tape. She said, oh, my friend wants to be a songwriter and a singer. Like, what do you think? I'm just hoping to like pick your brain, get your thoughts. Like, do you think she can make it? And I thought this was so smart because it avoided putting this executive in a really uncomfortable position, which could have impacted her career later on down the road. And it just would have made it weird. And also, it probably opened the door for true honesty versus him feeling like he needed to sugarcoat something. So she was getting like that raw, real feedback that she was after. It turned out that he loved it. And Kara eventually got a record deal. But then she also lost the record deal pretty quickly. And it was then that she started to learn that it was her songwriting that was gaining traction more so than her voice as a solo artist. And she shared this moment where she sold a song for the first time, where she gave it away to another artist. And it sounded like it was really emotional and really painful experience for her. She said she felt like she stripped away a piece of herself because songwriting was so personal. Throughout the book, she referred to writing songs as her therapy and getting over some of these really heavy life moments. You mentioned her eating disorder. Music certainly helped her get through that. And she said that it just kind of like hurt her feelings that it made it seem like somebody else could sing her own words better than she could. Like, oh, well, if you think this song is so good, like, why won't you let me sing it? But what I found so refreshing about this book was she was like, honestly, I didn't care that much because the paycheck like made me feel a lot better. And with each dollar, it hurt less to give my songs away. And some people may call this selling out, but I call it finding your niche and being savvy. And I just loved how frank she was about her finances. Even though she grew up really privileged, she worked super hard. She saved her money. She valued working hard for her money. And I also appreciated in her book that she shared that message of saving, investing, and being able to stand on your own two feet as a woman, not relying on a man or anybody else to get you what you want. Obviously, that's easier said than done when you don't have children or other extenuating circumstances. But I do think it's valuable for people, especially women, when you're in a position to stand on your own, to take that chance to be able to do so.
She was definitely like very savvy and honestly just seemed smart when it came to finances and navigating kind of this industry. But she talked about something that she's most proud of, and that was how she was able to be there for her mother when she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And of course, when it rains, it pours, like right after that diagnosis. And to Kara's admitted surprise, her mom also filed for divorce from her father. So you get this terminal cancer diagnosis. Your mom decides she wants to separate from your dad. And I just can't imagine how overwhelming and difficult to process that all would have been. And she became her mom's primary caregiver and went and took care of her mom during this period. And she said that going through that traumatic, prolonged event of watching her mother like slowly deteriorate, but also being able to have this time with her mother gave Kara the gift and awareness of being able to live in the moment. Something that I find so difficult, especially now with, you know, technology and countless distractions. And as per Kara, that was the worst thing that she has ever lived through. And she said that after that, nothing could really touch her. She had gone through this absolute hell of watching her mom slowly die. And she said, when you think about it, like getting fired from a job or losing out on a big opportunity, that's just always going to pale in comparison. That's small potatoes, like no big deal. And she credits this experience for making her strong and tough.
Oh, that was really hard to read about too. I remember she just kind of threw everything she had at being successful after her mom died. And she references this experience throughout, as like you mentioned earlier, Mary, she pulled on her personal experiences to write songs for other people. And I think that's really interesting when we hear some of these big pop songs. A piece of that is Kara singing about losing her mom. A piece of that is about Kara dealing with her eating issues. Mm-hmm. But she found a way to make her hurt relate to other people's hurt or their experiences. And she said that was sort of her superpower as a songwriter, being able to find that common ground. So Kara went on to tell this really funny story about when she was first getting her foot in the door in the music industry, and she was starting to write for other artists. Again, this was a new concept for her because she was always looking to be a singer herself. But her first big song that made it was called Spinning Around in 2000. And it was for Kylie Minogue. And apparently, Kara didn't know who Kylie was. And this song was originally meant to be for Paula Abdul, but Paula wasn't going to sing it. So it went to Kylie, and Kara was like kind of upset about it. She's like, well, I don't even know who this Kylie person is. Like, what the F? Isn't that insane?
It's crazy. And just to expand on Paula, like, I believe Kara and Paula actually wrote the song together.
Yes.
Like, I think Paula took a chance on Kara to, like, you know, write with her. And they seemingly struck up a real friendship. We hear a lot about Paula in this book. They obviously end up on American Idol together, but we'll talk about that later. But Kara tells a hilarious story. She's starting to gain some clout, and she had flown out to LA to work with some artists. And Miss Paula Abdul offered to let Kara stay at her lavish, I'm sure, apartment while she was out of town. So Kara was there writing. Paula wasn't in town, but was like, hey, girl, you can stay at my place. And Kara tells this story that I just thought was so funny about how, like, Paula had, like, a housekeeper and a maid. And one day she came back from the recording session, and there were some brownies that had been set out on the counter by presumably the maid or, you know, whoever. And she was like, oh, this is great. And she's still, mind you, kind of dealing with her eating disorder. And I think she had had a long, kind of stressful day and just went crazy with these brownies. Flash forward, you know, next morning, Kara is in the hospital for seemingly like overdosing on weed brownies that the maid didn't realize were weed brownies and had just set on the counter as like a nice gesture. And I feel like someone else was hospitalized from eating them
too. The housekeeper
had some too. Yeah, that's what it was. I can only imagine how terrifying that would have been. But just funny, it seemed like her and Paula really had, for a period there, a really nice friendship.
I also remember reading that Kara decided, I don't know if it was this trip, where Kara decided to get liposuction like on the fly. But I just remember she was staying at Paula's house as a guest.
Yeah.
And she was like, actually, I'm going to get liposuction. She had like struggled with her eating. She wasn't really happy with the way she looked. And the way that Kara positioned it in her book was, the only thing that I care about more than anything else in this world is money. And she's like, if I'm going to put money into my body, then I will think twice about my binging habits. So it was an interesting way of justifying it, but I'm not judging her. I mean, whatever you have to do to have a healthy relationship with your body and with food, that was the way that she decided to do it. So she said it's so common in LA for people to get liposuction at 1 and be back in the office at 7. So she was like, this will be no big deal. And she had to go back to this recording session after getting liposuction. It sounded like it was really hard for her to walk and sit down. And then Paula had to like help nurse her back to health. Like her house guest, who was only supposed to be there for like a few days. It's just so funny. Like I can only imagine like how close they must be. Kara mentioned that they would just lay in bed together and giggle over the fact that Kara just decided to get liposuction on the fly. It just sounds like they were so close. And I love that Paula took this chance on her, because that's the only way that you can really get your foot in the door, right? It's like, you know, someone has to be willing to take a chance on you. And how cool that it was Paula.
I agree with everything you said. I just like, I couldn't tell. I hope her and Paula are still friendly now. I believe she referenced some tension in regards to Paula being a little upset that Kara didn't give her a heads up that she was coming on American Idol. But for contractual purposes, Kara was basically like sworn to secrecy.
I get it. Cause like, in order for Kara to get the job, she talks about the interview process and how intense it was and how the last person she had to go through was Simon Cowell. So she flew to London to meet with Simon Cowell to get like his blessing on her joining the panel of judges. So if I was Paula and I knew this girl who I had nursed back to health after she got liposuction and ate weed brownies in my house, I feel like I would have been mad too.
Right. I understand. She didn't make it clear to me how they are now. You know, because Paula left.
It got really weird because Paula and Kara were on one season together. And then Paula left after Kara's first season. Mm-hmm. And Kara found out that Paula was leaving through the news. Yeah. So again, it's like, did Paula have the same situation where she didn't want to tell the wrong person? But it also sounds like things just move so quickly that sometimes the artists themselves don't even know when news is going out. I mean, that's showbiz, baby. But I just feel like I'm with you. It was a little unsettling. But let's move on to happier topics, which is when Kara popped. So after she writes this Kylie Minogue hit with Paula, she had a run of success in the Latin market with none other than Enrique Iglesias and also Marc Anthony. So speaking of Enrique, she told some really funny stories about pranks they used to play on each other, on how they wrote the song Escape together. I fucking love that song.
It's so good.
Oh my God, it's amazing. So I guess they worked together on Escape. That was the first song that Kara ever wrote with Enrique. And then he wanted to work with her again. And by this time, she had a little bit more clout. She had more songwriting credits under her belt. So that meant she was more expensive. Mm-hmm. So Enrique, I guess, wasn't happy with how expensive she was being and the credit that she wanted as part of this song. The way that Kara positioned it was, you know, early on, you get the crumbs that people offer you and you don't really have a leg to stand on to advocate for yourself and to get the credit that you believe that you deserve. And she talked a lot about how she would sing on demo tapes and then artists who would get the demos of her singing the song that Kara wrote, the artist would copy every breath, every inflection. And she felt like she deserved producing credits because she was directing the artist for how to sing. Isn't that what a producer does? So she talked a lot about credit and how that works in the music industry. And I guess Enrique had a problem with a credit that Kara was asking for on one of his songs. So much to Kara's surprise, she sees on a song that her name is credited as Kaka instead of Kara. I think I would have died. And
I know.
In today's day and age, I think Enrique would have been canceled absolutely over that, like diminishing a woman's, you know, contribution on his. I don't think that would have gone over very well now. But it seems like Kara had a sense of humor about it and she got what she wanted in the end. But he claimed to know nothing about it and had no knowledge of it. And it was just an honest mistake. But she was like, I think this was payback because he's a big prankster. But she did confirm also that he's very dreamy in person.
I got the sense that they like had a lot of fun with each other. Like, I just think that was their dynamic, you know, like she talked about going out in the clubs with him in Miami. Like, I think they were like friends and got along, but they definitely had like a vicious prank war. And in response to Kaka, do you remember how she responded? She was not going to let Enrique win that prank war. And apparently they were going to use his music for an episode. I believe it was Dancing with the Stars. Yep. They wanted to use Escape or something. And as the credited writer, she needed to approve the use of the song. And apparently, you know, as people were reaching out, they were calling, she was kind of putting people off. And you're like, I'll get back to you. I'll let you know. And she waited till the day of the show until Enrique legitimately got on the phone and called her himself to finally say, okay. So they have a good rapport, I feel
totally.
Like.
Yeah, there was one case where she was like, oh, I know him. I'm one of the writers. And he pretended like not to know her. So security had to like escort her away. Like definitely a fun, you know, back and forth, a fun banter. So all in good fun. She didn't say like she hates Enrique or anything. It definitely seems like they have a good relationship. I just thought the Kaka thing was crazy. Like if I told my family, like, you should buy the CD, like I'm going to be in the sleeve. And then I saw Kaka, I think I would levitate. as a woman in the industry, you're already so underrepresented. Like,
it's true.
But either way, it was a great story to tell about what she had to do to get the credit that she wanted on a lot of these songs and how she still continues to fight for credits that she believes she deserves. So after working with Enrique and Paula, 2004 and 2005, like, this was Kara freaking popping like popcorn. Okay. All of these young female singers are just flocking to Kara to be like, help me write an amazing song. So the New York Times had this amazing article about her in like the mid 2000s. And they said, quote, for a time, her compositions like Hilary Duff's Come Clean. Ashley Simpson's Pieces of Me. Paris Hilton's I Want You. Were unavoidable, but given the often thin vocals behind them, surprisingly tolerable. The songs, mostly about romantic woes, were spiked with keen insight and occasionally acerbic wit. So like, okay, New York Times, I don't love the low-key shade, but I appreciate the writing prowess. Kudos.
Kudos deserved, because she really was everywhere during this era. And in true fashion, I have to give a shout out to Chapter 8, because this really got my pop music spidey senses tingling.
I knew you'd love this one. As soon as I heard this, I was like, oh my God, Mary's going to die.
Yes. She pays homage to our beloved Swedes and talks about the late, great Dennis Pop and Max Martin. And Kara actually spent a lot of time going back and forth to and from Sweden, because she quickly realized that she needed to be around these writing and production geniuses because of how pivotal they were in pop music. She really wanted to learn from their process. And she said that she believes that the Swedish songwriters and producers that we all know and love had so much success in music because they speak in melody, which I thought was very interesting. And I love that. I wish I could speak in melody. I wish I could hold a melody. I could just see Max Martin being like, my loneliness is killing me. And I don't know. I don't even know how to speak in melody.
What is he doing to Taylor Swift? He's like, no, it's
the second and the fifth one was great. It's gonna double that.
Literally, like, put me in that man's brain. I want to be there. But so she was going back and forth from Sweden, and this kind of coincided in this time period after her mother died. She was obviously very vulnerable and going through it. And she fell in love with a nameless Swedish producer while doing this back and forth. She does not name him, but she describes it as the worst relationship of her life. He was this classic bad boy that she just wanted to fix. And she reflected that she like loved the long distance relationship aspect of this. It creates this safe distance. You get to go on a few honeymoon type vacations together, and then you can go back home, live your life, work your long hours, be your own person, have your own schedule. You have no one to answer to. And then, you know, you go on these trips, you're together for a week, but then you can skedaddle before, you know, any shit hits the fan. It's like a very safe way not to get very close to someone, not to actually know somebody. And long story short, despite all the red flags, they did get engaged, but Kara quickly soon found out through a friend that her fiance also had a girlfriend. Womp womp. And basically he was using her for clout and for some of her connections in the, you know, American music industry. And Kara, I will say, she does have some good self-awareness. She reflected on this time and wondered if she was pursuing relationships like this, like these painful relationships that, you know aren't going to work out, you know are going to suck. Maybe she pursued these relationships so she would have something to write about, you know, like a subconscious choice. And she said she learned you don't have to stay in chaos to create art. You just need to have a good memory, which I think is very profound.
I know. I remember thinking like, wow, this girl must be in therapy, because it sounds like she has such clarity telling these stories. I don't know. I was just like, wow, she looks back on everything with such an objective light. And I was really impressed with her ability to do that because it can be hard to critique yourself.
Yeah. And like, I get why she did what she did. And it sounds like she does too. So very interesting. She also gets to some dark areas in this book. You know, she tells us that she was molested by a family friend while she was a child. She was date raped by a music executive who had a daughter and a wife that she knew. And she was sexually harassed by a very prominent artist that she worked with at the time. And by the way, she didn't identify any of these people. She gave a few breadcrumbs. And for this music artist, she gave enough breadcrumbs for me to go figure out who the fuck it was that basically made her touch inappropriate areas of his body and like chased her around and tried to sleep in the same bed with her, was like very over the top inappropriate with her, was married at the time, had this wonderful wife. You just got to read the book and let us know if you can figure out who it is too. But seriously, Kara has clearly put in the work, like Kelsey said. It's just so brave of her to be willing to put all of this, so much darkness. That is a lot of darkness to go through out there when telling her story. I just have a lot of respect for her, and she's clearly a very strong woman. But let's pivot away from the darkness into the light.
Are you a songwriter, Mary? Because that was beautiful.
I am trying to be...
Speaking melody.
Maxwell Martin Jr. What's the girl version of that? Maxine Martin.
Oh my God.
I am deranged, but Kara
Maxine Martina.
Ooh, I love that. My alter ego. I will speak in only melody.
Oh my God.
Now I'll sit in silence for 10 minutes while I try to come up with one. But okay. So in 2009, Kara got the big role as a judge on American Idol. She was brought in with Simon, Randy, and Paula. And I think she kind of was surprised that she was even considered for this position, let alone getting the job. That's something she kind of talked about throughout her chapters on American Idol, just like fans not really knowing who she was or like why she deserved to be there. And Berg gave her a chance to explain kind of what credentials gave her the right to be a judge on like the American singing show at the time. But she was there for the 8th and 9th seasons when the show was still like fairly iconic. She was on Adam Lambert's season. Like that's when people were still getting famous off of these shows. And I feel like now, who's the last famous person you remember from American Idol or like The Voice? I just feel like those shows don't produce people like they used to, like, you know, Kelly, Carrie, Chris Daughtry, Adam.
I feel like One Direction from the X Factor.
Right. But that was like, what, 10 years ago?
Or like Susan, who was that woman? Who was saying, like,
Susan Boyle.
The dream.
But like, is she still famous? Like, I don't know. Right. It just had a different impact back then, I feel like.
You're right. Now it's just like a viral social media moment.
Yes.
Yeah. So she struggled a lot on American Idol. And again, she's so candid about her missteps. She admitted that she was just talking too much. She was interrupting people. But she was also like, no one trained me. No one told me what to do. And I was joining this crazy tight-knit group of three judges who already understood the flow and the dynamics and the politics of it all. It sounds like they just really dropped her into the deep end. She just had to tread water. One American Idol moment that stood out to me in her book was during her second season on the show after Paula left. So I guess when Paula left, they just had a series of like celebrity guest judges. I don't know. I didn't watch it. But apparently Victoria Beckham was guest judging. And she told her agent, Victoria Beckham is done recording. She goes to her agent, who is Simon Fuller. We talked about him in the Spice Girls episode, aka the creator of American Idol. Victoria goes and tells Simon Fuller how mean Simon Cowell was being to Kara. So Kara's agent called her and was like, are you okay? Like, I just heard from Simon Fuller, who heard from Victoria Beckham, that Simon's being an asshole to you. Like, that must have been so bad for that to happen. I also feel like it kind of gives her some street credit, though, that she wasn't the one who, like, told on him.
Yes.
She let someone else do it to just show, like, how resilient she was and how she wanted to earn her stripes. So she did go on to share that Simon really softened over time, but it was really hard for her to find her stride. She said she loved Randy, and that when she sort of had that crack in her friendship with Paula Abdul, it was really during the show. So she eventually left the show on her own terms. It sounds like she's totally at peace with the experience, even though it was a really trying one.
Apparently there was this whole drama before she left, as the tabloids were saying she had been fired, but she was like, I had just talked to production and they had still told me that I was a part of the show, but she was ready to be done with the show and ultimately made the decision and kind of clears the air in this book that she was the one that asked to be let out of her contract. She was the one who asked to go.
Yeah, she mentioned that this was like the first time she ended up on Perez Hilton, like all the stuff surrounding American Idol. She's like, I can still remember the little, you know, thought bubbles he used to draw onto me. And she said that she's over it now and Perez has apologized since, but wow, you did not want to end up on Perez Hilton.
No, with penises.
No. I read it every single moment of every single day that I wasn't in school. He was on my birthday cake one year. I loved Perez, but now it's like, why? He was just so mean.
He was mean.
But anyways, obviously Kara is not hurting since she left American Idol. If anything, American Idol needed her more than she needed American Idol, because she co-owns a publishing company called Art House Entertainment, which has been a part of chart-topping hits that we all know, including B.O.B.'s Nothing on You. I could be chasing, but my time would be wasted. They got nothing on you. Nothing on you. Bruno Mars, Just the Way You Are. Grenade. What you don't understand is I catch a grenade. Oh, CeeLo Green's Fuck You. Flo Rida's The Club Can't Even Handle Me Right Now. Demi Lovato's Heart Attack. If I ever did that, I think I'd have a heart attack. Jason Derulo, who we will see in Cancun. Oh. She's done a ton of his songs. She's even worked with Zedd and Maroon 5. So what a cool range of artists. It's not just these like pop princesses that we may associate with her from Y2K. It's everyone.
She's honestly like a titan in the industry. Since 2012, she's taught a semester course called Hitmaking with Kara DioGuardi at Berklee College of Music in Boston. And oh my God, Kelsey, I wish we had known about this back in the day so we could have, you know, like snuck in something.
Moonlighted as a Berklee student.
We're auditing this class. But and one of her students was Charlie Puth, someone who I honestly feel like is very well known for his songwriting. Like Charlie Puth wrote Stay by Justin Bieber. Okay. Like that was the song of 2021 or whatever year it was. He is a very talented artist and also very talented songwriter. So cool to just see how far her reach is. She also is a queen of giving back, and she works with the Phoenix House, a nonprofit substance abuse service organization. But I think she's always been very philanthropic. She told a story about an American Idol house. They convinced her to come out in a bikini and she like would not do it. And everybody was like bullying her to do it. Like Simon was like, darling, you have to do it. You have to do it. She's like, no. And he's like, well, what if I make X amount of dollar donation to charity? And she was like, okay, I'll do it. And she was like, someone must have told Simon that I'm willing to do a lot of things for charities. So I really liked hearing that. And you know, we always have to talk about someone's love life. And you gotta be wondering what's going on in Kara's love life. She definitely talks about a lot of relationships in this book. Most of the people do not have a name. But Kara began dating a teacher turned general contractor, Mike McCuddy, in 2007, after the two met while he was working on a house next to her property in Maine. Mike was working on the property next door, and they started talking one night, and they basically started a long-distance relationship after a while. And he knew what she did, but he eventually saw the extent of what she did. So, like, that she was writing songs for A-list celebrities. She wasn't just some kind of, like, rinky-dink songwriter. She was writing songs for Britney Spears, and it kind of gave him pause because he seemed to be a bit worried that she was kind of like a socialite out hitting the clubs, that vibe. And she was like, no, 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 that is not my vibe. I'd much rather be at home with some wine. And she's like, even some cheap wines, great. You know, she just kind of had this very like laid back vibe. And he decided to give the relationship a chance. And they ended up getting married in 2009 in Maine at a very small intimate ceremony. I think she said like 20 people were invited. He has a teenage daughter from a previous relationship, which Kara seems to be very close to her, and they have one son together. Kelsey, I've been trying to find kind of the adjectives, the words to describe Kara's sound, Kara's music, and I feel like it's something we're able to encapsulate a little clearer in our Max Martin episode, because the man is very formulaic. He has his signatures and he tends to keep them present in his work. Kara dabbles in both writing and production, but I find her more heavy-handed as a writer. We have described her as an alt-pop queen in past episodes. Do you think there's anything we're missing that I guess is common to her work?
So I thought she was an alt-pop queen until I learned she wrote like Escape and got nominated for a Latin Grammy and did all this other work with all these other artists. This book really opened my eyes to just how much more versatile she is. So I honestly don't know. I feel like she's a chameleon.
Hey, I mean, it's such a strength that you can have so many different skins the way Kara does. I feel like, yeah. I agree. She can't be put in one box.
To write Escape and Sober by Pink. That's insane.
So let's go through and talk about some of our favorite Kara tracks. Kelsey, start us off.
Okay, this was so fun. So my first one is a deep ass cut. Do you remember the reality show Living Lohan?
So I don't think I watched the show, but I love the song you're about to tell us.
Oh my God. So this was the reality show, for those of you who don't know, about Lindsay Lohan's family. Lindsay wasn't in it. It was just about her sister trying to become a star and their mom being a momager. So the song that Kara helped her wrote is All the Way Around by Ali Lohan. LOL. Oh my God.
Such a bop.
Such a bop. I thought Ali had such a good voice back then. And like, what I like about Kara is that she's a serious songwriter who's been nominated for a Grammy, but she doesn't discriminate against who she works with. And I think that this song really demonstrates that. So that's why I liked it. Because like, couldn't you see a serious songwriter being like, I'm not going to work with her. Or like what, she's Lindsay Lohan's little sister, like on a reality show.
Sure.
Like
for
I could
sure.
totally see them just writing her off. But I love that she didn't do that. So that was my first song.
Okay, my first one is Ain't No Mother Man by Christina Aguilera. Hey, yes. So, yes, that one. I thought it was so interesting. She seemed to really like Christina. She was invited to her baby shower. Like, I got the sense that they were friends, but she talked about struggling with this song a bit because, as per Kara, songwriting's so personal and inspired by what you're going through. And when her and Christina were working on this song, Kara was in the worst relationship of her life with that Swedish D-bag. And she just was not feeling the song, the message of the song, couldn't get her energy behind this song, you know, because she just hadn't met her person. She wasn't in that place.
I remember her saying she hated the beginning. Do your thing, honey. Like, she hated that. But Christina wouldn't budge on it. She was like, I like it. I want it to be a part of the song. And then Kara was like, she was right. It works really well together. So I love that Kara admitted that she was wrong about something. I don't know. I feel like I would take credit for it if I was her. So my next pick is an Ashley Simpson bop. We got a lot about Ashley Simpson and Kara's book and how they came together to write Pieces of Me with John Shanks. In fact, in writing Pieces of Me, Kara shared a story that she was in Santa Monica for another writing session, and she turned around and left to go into the studio with John Shanks because he called her and he was like, get your ass in the studio right now. You do not want to miss this session. And it was with Ashley Simpson, who no one knew who she was. Kara only knew her as Jessica Simpson's little sister. And she walks into the studio to find out that Ashley is filming a reality show. And she was really excited. She told all of her friends and family, like, you guys are going to see me in the studio and see what I do on this new reality show. Like, you have to tune in. And then she was pissed because she didn't make it in the final edit. She said you could only see her knee. This is like caca all over again. Like, I would die if I told everyone I know to watch this show and I didn't make it in. Anyways, that's not the song I picked. I picked Boyfriend by Ashley Simpson. Even though Kara was really pissed that she didn't make it in Ashley Simpson show episode, she continued to work with Ashley. She said she loved her energy. And I love that she continued to work with her for subsequent albums. And Boyfriend is such a fun song. I didn't steal your boyfriend.
I know. She was like on the whole I Am Me album, Ashley's second album, which is really, really good. It didn't have the success of Autobiography, but it's so good. But my second song, I was going to tell the same story, is Autobiography by Ashley. Got stains on my t-shirt and I'm a big ass blur. I just loved how seemingly enraged she got about not being featured on the show. It just didn't seem like her energy. Like, I'm just surprised she wanted to be like on the show. Like, I get that you want to get exposure, but she just doesn't seem like she wants to be in the spotlight like that. I just found it so interesting that she was like, you know, calling up her attorneys. But
I know how she wanted to take legal action.
Yeah, she wanted to take, and I remember as a lawyer, I'm sitting there reading this, like, what freaking legal action is she going to take? You didn't put me in your show. Like, but as we talked about on our episode with Leah Russo, when we talked about Autobiography's anniversary, there's literally like not a skip on this album and Kara's all over it. So Autobiography, the song, the title track, is one of my favorites.
I so agree with you, Mary. I do think it's so funny that I feel like the reason why she wanted to be on the show was just to show her friends and family, like, this is what I do all day. Like, I feel like it would like legitimize what she was doing more so than give her a spotlight. Does that make sense?
That's true.
That was the sense I got from her, that it was more like validating if they could see her in action and understand what her contributions to these songs, how big it really is. Maybe that would conceptualize what she does for them.
True. That makes sense.
That was sort of how I like interpreted her rage about it. So my next pick, I feel like I've already talked about it on the podcast because I love it so much. It's Good Girls Go Bad by Cobra Starship. I was hanging in the corner with my five best friends. Kara also wrote Hot Mess with them. I mean, if this wasn't the soundtrack to your college experience, then you're tacky and I hate you.
Oh my God. Good Girls Go Bad is like one of my favorite songs of all time.
Agree.
Oh, good. Oh my God.
And with Leighton Meester, Blair Waldorf.
And then the one girl in Cobra Starship is Vicky T.
Sorry, who's Vicky T? Am I dumb?
No, you're a normal person. That's Britney Spears' former assistant.
Oh, that Vicky, you've talked about that Vicky T. Wait, yes. What? I didn't know that.
I think there's only one girl in Cobra Starship and she's the one girl.
Wow. What's your next carrot pick?
Oh. It's Beep by Pussycat Dolls. I don't give a cape looking at my, cause it don't mean a thing if you're looking at my, I'ma do my thing while you're playing with ya. Okay.
Ooh.
I used to love the Pussycat Dolls. I had this sweatshirt that Nicole used to wear and buttons. It said loosen up my buttons on the rim of the hoodie. And one of my friends from high school stole it. And I can't find it on eBay or anything.
Jail.
I really want my loosen up my buttons sweatshirt. I loved the Pussycat Dolls in this era. That first album had like four really big bangers. Beep was one of them. Kara talked about this a little bit, how like Will.i.am as a creator, he had the idea to kind of change lyrics to censor it before the radio could censor it, if that makes sense. So like, for example, the Black Eyed Peas' Don't Funk With My Heart. That was his decision to still say what he wanted to say, but like not get like blurred out by this. You know, when they edit it on the radio, try to like censor something, it just like is never as good. And so this was Will.i.am's kind of cool take on creative control and incorporating it in the Beep song by Pussycat Dolls. Oh, that was just such a good song.
No, it was such a good one. Banger. I love it. I love them. I love your taste in music. So my Ditto. Next pick is like the... I don't know. I guess we just like really love strong women because we're going from Pussycat Dolls to Celine Dion. Kara wrote One Heart by Celine Dion. If you got one heart, you are following. One dream keeps you wondering. The reason why this made my list isn't because this is my favorite Celine Dion song, but just because I love how it shows her range. And again, how hard it is to pinpoint the Cara Diaguardi signature sound, because her signature is like not having a signature. It's like just having good lyrics that you can sing along to.
The lyrics transcend genres, you know?
Transcending, like, yes.
I love it. That's a great one.
Tell me your next one.
Well, we had to talk about Come Clean. Obviously, that is a favorite song of us on the pod. But she just talked about how Hillary was a teenager when she got this song and how uncomfortable Kara felt about when she sang that I'm coming part at the final like bridge. I'm coming. I'm coming. I'm sorry, maybe I'm a prude, but I didn't even think of it that way when like I listened to it. Like I didn't see that song sexually, but Kara was like, I felt kind of weird giving this song to Hillary when she was in her teens and she's thinking about coming. And I'm like, oh my God, is this like a sex song? And I didn't even know.
Oh my God, I never, ever thought of that.
Right? So now I'm like, wait a minute. I don't know. I mean, love that song forever. Thought it was an interesting little story she shared.
All right, what's my next one? Oh, it's Kelly Clarkson.
No, Kelly Clarkson!
So I think it's kind of funny that Kara was writing all of these American Idol songs before she joined America. She just had like this Idol connection. She worked a lot with Kelly Clarkson at the beginning of her career. And she wrote, Just Walk Away. Well, if you don't have the answer, why are you still standing here? It's just like a good little bop that I used to sing in my car all the time going to school.
I love how she told us that Kelly wrote that incredible bridge on the song. I need a love, I need a fire, the burn in my desire. That one. I want a love, I want a fire, to feel the burn in my desires. I want a man by my side, not a boy who runs and hides. That's all Kelly. That's the best part of the song, but it's a great song. The range.
The range.
Okay, my next one is Confessions of a Broken Heart by Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, God.
And like, she worked with Lindsay on her first album, A Little More Personal, her second album. There's a lot of songs that I probably would have picked over this one, but Kara, you know, made a note about that she thought this was the song that Lindsay was most involved with because she was able to draw through like the real life shit that she was actually going through at the time with Michael Lohan. We all know what was going on with Lindsay back in the day and her dad being like a media whore, but like Kara also had her own version of an estranged relationship with her father, and so she felt like she was able to contribute to that as a songwriter as well. And she just reflected on her time working with Lindsay, and she was just so busy at this time. She like never went into an actual studio to record. The studio was always brought to her. There'd be a studio erected wherever Lindsay was staying or her trailer. For example, when she was filming Herbie Fully Loaded, Kara was in this makeshift studio in Lindsay's trailer and would just sit all day and wait for Lindsay to have a break and come lay down a few verses, a song, write whatever. And then she would leave and she would wait again. And so just, you know, interesting to get kind of the behind the scenes stories about some of these songs.
I was kind of shocked by that, Mary, because I remember obviously Lindsay's singing career, but it was nowhere near where like Hillary's was in terms of like the success of it all. So I'm just like kind of surprised that everyone was like bending over backwards for her music career. I don't know. I found that really surprising.
I love her first album.
I like it, but I just don't remember it having the same level of success as like an Ashley or a Hillary.
I don't think it was that same level of success. I agree with that.
I was just surprised. Like, man, they were really bending over backwards for her, which is great because we love it. Mm. So speaking of rock, my next song is We Rock, which appeared in Camp Rock. Which again, the range, Celine Dion to Camp Rock.
Wow.
I love Kara for this. I really do.
I mean, I would love if she had given us some like Jonas Brothers stories. Anything I know. Like I that.
Know. Camp Rock came out in 2008. So she is withholding. She's withholding.
She has Jonas Brothers tea.
She has tea and she's not spilling. Wow. We totally could have heard about the Demi and Joe and Taylor of it all.
Oh. We need a part two.
We need a part two to hell and back, to heaven and back.
Yes. Again, this goes to her range. My next one is a Jessica Simpson one, A Little Bit. A little less talk, a little more do. This was one of Kara's earlier songs, and there were other songs I may have loved better than this, but I liked the story behind it. She worked pretty closely with Tommy Mottola, and he needed a song for Jessica Simpson, and I believe this was one of Jessica's, maybe her second single. So she was still pretty new, and she was in New York, and she didn't have access to like producers or people to like help her lay down a track to like give Tommy a demo. So she literally that same day came up with like a song and a melody, but couldn't like lay down the track. And so she called his secretary and was like, yeah, I have that song that Tommy asked for. And you know, these secretaries are like gatekeepers. And she's like, okay, send us the tape, like goodbye. And she's like, no, I don't have a tape. I have to come in and sing it for him. And the secretary is like, puts her on hold for an hour. And it's like, okay, come in right now. And so she goes in, she's standing in front of Tommy Mottola. He like discovered Mariah Carey.
They were married. Mariah Carey's first husband.
MC's first husband, he was the chairman of Sony Music. So he was the big boss. He was the big guy. So she goes in and sings in front of Tommy Mottola. She's like, I remember like creating a beat and like tapping my leg and like tapping my toe, trying to like sing this song for him and give him the image of what it's supposed to sound like, which he ultimately liked. And, you know, obviously became Jessica Simpson's, I think, second single. But it's just like, imagine doing that.
I don't do well under pressure. I crumble.
Being like,
like a cheap suit.
Yeah, I know.
Brain.
Okay, what do you got?
Well, my next one's more of just a fun fact.
Okay.
She has two songs called Supergirl. One word, Supergirl. Okay. One for Hannah Montana. And one for Hillary Duff. Haven't you heard? I'm Supergirl. You don't wanna mess with me. I just thought that was interesting.
So that's clearly a theme.
Two pop queens.
And strong women. She is a strong woman.
You're so right, Mary.
Another one I'm just touching on is Sober by Pink. No pain inside. You're like perfection. But how do I feel this good sober? This is by no means my favorite song, but it's a great song. It's really heavy for me, but I just like how she tells us in the book how her eating disorder was like her inspiration for this song. Like that is her version of sober, as you know, someone else's might be alcohol or someone else's might be something else, but it's just really powerful and also just shows how versatile a song like that is as well. Obviously a huge success, extremely powerful, but what do you got for me?
Okay, my last and final one is Screwed by Paris Hilton.
Oh, I love it.
I love that song. And again, I love that Kara is like a serious songwriter, Grammy nominated, and she doesn't write off these pop girlies and their experiences and still writes really fun songs for them. I really respect that about her. And I love that.
She talked about working with Paris. She was like, Paris will be the first to tell you she doesn't have the pipes of Christina or something. Like, she's not delusional about her voice, but she works really hard and she's always so sweet and kind and thoughtful to everybody. And it sounded like she just had a great experience just working with Paris, which, again, you love to hear nice stories about people in the industry.
Agree. I love it too. Tell me your next
My three one. Honorable mentions. Something I Already Know by the Backstreet Boys. Literally my number two song on my 30 for 30 Backstreet Boys song. And she wrote it. Are you kidding me? Like, oh,
I know.
Oh,
it's insane.
But Play With Fire by Hilary Duff is another one that I love.
Is it from Metamorphosis?
No, it may have just actually been a standalone single before Dignity.
Oh, yeah. They did a lot on Dignity.
Yeah, but it's a really undercover bop, I think. And then Ooh Ooh Baby. Ooh, ooh, baby, touch me and I come alive. I can feel you on my lips. I can feel you deep inside. Britney Spears' Blackout, the Bible of Pop. And we talked about that in our episode on Blackout. And we talked about how Ooh Ooh Baby didn't necessarily like fit Blackout, but was still like such a good song. And I think that's really interesting. Like now knowing that Kara DioGuardi is the person behind it, like it just had its own unique tone, and maybe it not seeming to fit is what made it fit. Like, I just don't know where this world would be without Ooh Ooh Baby.
I know you said that was like one of your favorite songs from the entire album.
Yes. So I definitely have an affinity for Kara's work. I think we both do. There's a ton of other songs. Like, we have a doc here, guys, and we had to cross a ton out because we didn't have time. But okay. So Kelsey, since this is our newfound When They Pop book club, I need to know, how many pink glittery microphones would you rate a hell of a high note?
Okay. I'm going to give it like a 7.5 because I went in with unrealistic expectations that she would spill more about like working with these stars, but it makes sense that she wouldn't because she needs to preserve those relationships. And if I was a celebrity, you know, bearing my soul to somebody in the recording studio to get good lyrics into a song, I would think twice before sharing my experiences with somebody who's likely to write a book about it, you know? So I guess I just had like higher expectations from like the celeb gossip standpoint.
I know.
But I think it was a good read overall. How would you rate it?
I'm the same, Kelsey. It should be no surprise. I'll give it a 7 just to, you know, mix it up. But like, I fully went into this book like expecting a chapter on working on Blackout. So like, like was like, okay, I'm going to learn something new about Britney today. But like, again, that's like just like such a dumb thought. Because when you like look at the bigger picture, it's like, okay, she can't do that. So if you're into music, pop music, the industry, you know, I would recommend. But let us know if you have any other recommendations for the When They Popped book club. We could do Paris Hilton's. We could do Mariah Carey's. The options are endless. I'll put a little Q&A in our Spotify episode to give you a chance to tell us, like, what celeb memoir should be next on our list. But anywho, it's December, so get excited for some holiday-themed episodes coming your way in the next few weeks.
Also, we just want to give a huge shout-out. Everyone's Spotify Wrapped came out this week, and so many of you shared that we were in your top 5 podcasts, and like that's just insane to us. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for rating us. If you want to give us 5 stars, we'd love you for it. We're just really appreciative to go into December and the holiday season on such a high note, thanks to your guys' generosity with your time. So thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.